This is a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. Go to allthews.3cr.org.au.
City Limits. Brought to us by the People's Committee for Melbourne every Wednesday at 9am.
City Limits is Melbourne's only hour devoted to our urban environment.
To transport and planning and housing issues.
To privatisations and our utility services.
To building and or maintaining a sense of community. 855 on the AM band, if we can hear it through
okay,
the noise,
City Limits
and find it through the smog. City Limits.
Oh. Just because I say Mike's live, it doesn't mean you can speak.
See, hear all that? That was all going to air. Anyway, I didn't have my headphones. I slammed my headphones on as I started speaking and didn't realise the thing it's had was still going. Anyway, that's City. A great start to City Limits today. And that would also indicate that Anne Maxwell's back in town and with us. And
with a bang.
I'm Kevin Healy, that's right. And it is Housing Day, so Shane McGrath from the Housing with the Age Action Group's coming in shortly to talk to us. And also Jack Verdon from Friends of Public Housing, among other things. So we've got a pretty full program, and there's never any shortage of things to talk about when it comes to housing. As
no, it's on and on.
Plays around, and there's all sorts of bits of paper here in front of me. You can hear it. Do you want a cup of tea, Anne?
Oh, that's what I need.
The clinking of the cups.
That'll just relax me.
Now you've got to make a choice very shortly.
I love the sound of a cup of tea pouring.
You've got Vietnam Morale from Ministry, or Don't Be a Mug, Join the Union Today. The tough one. Do you want to? Which one?
It's
do you
a tough
want?
One, isn't it?
It is.
We're
a
choosing
tough one.
The mugs, not the tea, right?
Okay.
Yes,
yeah.
I'll go Vietnam.
Go. Okay, Vietnam. Sure, go right here.
Thank you.
Here we are. Okay, yeah. And I'm Don't Be a Mug, Join the Union Today. That's me.
Okay. We've got to now, defeat the US invaders over here.
Now, I've thought of a way, Ed, in which you and I can make a lot of money.
Ooh.
Yes. Now, I knew you'd be thrilled with that. Now, I don't know if you've been following this wonderful saga. I'm sure everyone is with Baited. Of two radio people who've had a fallout and they're all suing. And now, I must say, I've never heard these people. I know the bloke has a particularly awful reputation as a real right-wing, terrible thing. That's aside the point.
No, I've never managed to listen.
Now, I thought, can I just draw the headline got to me, Jackie claims 82 million compo because they got rid of her. Now, I thought if you and I could confect a bit of a blue on air,
yes.
I insult you and then you insult me back and say how hurt you are and I'll say how hurt I am, and 3CR will say, we can't have this on air, we're going to get rid of you.
Let's do
we
it.
We can sue 3CR for millions.
82 million.
Millions, Woo. Yes. So here's our chance.
I'm going to insult you right now, Kevin, you capitalist Jew.
I'm not a...
How do you...
You haven't even got a stove at home at the moment.
I know you've got multiple real estate investments happening and lots of hedge funds and all of that.
Damn, I've been
on.
Found out again.
It's not even an insult, it's true, people.
Okay. Now, down to things that. Well, this is serious, I think. This dreadful policy that Angus Taylor came out with yesterday, which he delivered at the Menzies Centre, which of course is a Liberal Party.
Well named.
Menzies joint, Liberal Party joint. But, you know, this Australian values thing. Now, there are many bad parts to it, but one of the ones I think that hasn't really been raised in the news particularly. One of the first targets for scrutiny would be the approximate 3,000 Gazans the Albanese government took in after war erupted between Iran, backed Hamas and Israel. For too long, we've turned a blind eye to a reality of immigration and integration. Those who migrate from liberal democracies have a greater likelihood of subscribing to Australian values compared to those migrating from places ruled by fundamentalist extremists and dictators, Taylor said. In that vein, the cohort of Gazans led into Australia following the October 7 attacks presents a clear risk to our country. That cohort must be reassessed entirely with far greater scrutiny. I mean, these people are fleeing war and they're a risk.
It's
he wants to throw them out, send them back.
Yeah, it's a real example of the us and them mentality, isn't it?
And of course, when he talks about values, we, you know, he means Islam from various places. But this is the big question, though, Anne. What are true Blawazi values, Australian values? I mean, they keep both parties talk about our values. What are they?
It's a bit of a dog whistle, that one, isn't it?
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe it's our capitalist values, Kev.
Maybe. Well, it certainly is. That's what they mean, doesn't it? Isn't it? But they also, you know, the Liberal Party keep, when it says, you know, it's going so badly, they keep saying, we have to get back to our core values. Mm. Now,
They
assume their core values, therefore, must be the Australian values, but right. I'm sure a lot of other people wouldn't consider Liberal Party core values as their values. So,
voting for them, aren't we?
Yeah, so perhaps if anyone doesn't agree with Liberal Party core values, they should have to leave the country, even those born here.
Well, they just have to go through the electoral results and
send
us all over to, Cuba.
Yeah, that's right. Well, that'll be American shortly as well, like Donald gets his way. Let's hope it isn't, though, that's for sure.
What a speech.
Anyway, now, and of course, Donald Trump has now turned his vitriol on poor old Pope Leo.
Yes.
Illa Papa. And he says he's a bad man, he got no idea, and he's, you know, the usual Trumpian insults and carry on.
Spontaneous rant, yes.
What the Pope actually said was, enough of the idolatry of self and money, enough of the display of power, enough of war. True strength is shown in serving life. And dear brothers and sisters, there are certainly binding responsibilities that fall to the leaders of nations. To them we cry out, stop it. It is time for peace. Sit at the table of dialogue and mediation, not at the table where rearmament is planned and deadly actions are decided. And, you know, he went on in that vein. And that's what Trump's upset about. Now, I'm trying to think which of that we'd think was, you know, made him a really bad man.
I wonder, has the Pope been making statements like this before that just haven't hit the media?
Oh, he's made a couple of earlier, but this was the strongest he's got. Mm. But he's been critical of all this from the outset.
Is he also tweeting? How does he issue his missives?
I don't know if he sends them out. Don't know if he puts capitals every now and again, a big word in capital.
That's right. A few exclamation marks.
That's right. And the odd misspelling. Trump doesn't know you put a bracket sick next to certain words. Trump got stuck into poor old Emmanuel Macron. Now, I don't think Macron's not one of our favourites, because the French, certainly with their role in the Pacific and all that, they themselves are not perfect. But he insulted his wife. He got stuck into Macron. We're carrying on about Macron's wife and hitting him or whatever, and made these jokes at some function with his own lackeys in the audience, who roared laughing at his incredible humour. Now Macron, it's good though, because it's really getting people to finally stop just sitting either crawling to him or doing nothing, because you're afraid what he's going to come back with.
Right.
And Macron said he called for less chatter about the war and a more serious approach. When you want to be serious, you don't say every day the opposite of what you said the day before. He said the airstrikes by the US and Israel were decided on by themselves and not the subject of consultation. They then lament that they are alone in an operation they decided on alone. It's not our operation. They're starting
Pointing
to get stuck
out.
Into him.
Mm, some inconsistency.
Yeah, that's right. Which isn't hard to find with Trump, by the way.
Yeah.
But there you are. Now you'll be. This is the surprise I'm sure you'll find. But a former Queensland senator. A Melbourne associate of disgraced Sydney fraudster Bill Pappas and the director of an Adelaide tech company, who referred to its investors as idiots, are among close to 100 Australians whacked with director and financial services bans over the past year amid a surge in the rate of corporate wrongdoing across the country. That must come as a surprise to you, Anne.
I am shocked, yes.
Yes, you looked a bit shocked.
I thought we had upstanding corporates.
You paled when I said that.
Just let me get to my tea here, Kevin.
According to the Australian Securities and Investment Commission, 97 company directors and financial advisors were banned or disqualified in the 12 months to March, and they join a list of thousands of Australian directors currently serving years-long bans, with some disqualified for life. So they're the wonderful people running our companies. Isn't that good to know?
They must be pretty bad if they get the ban.
Yeah.
Like, you know.
Yeah, that's right.
That would be the peak of badness there.
So that's them. Mm. Now, going back late last year, there's a report that the AUSTRAC, the Financial Crimes Agency, launched an investigation into Bendigo and Adelaide Bank's compliance with anti-money laundering. Ooh. And subsequently there's been some action on that. The Commonwealth Bank's New Zealand subsidiary late last year was fined 5.87 million Australian by the New Zealand Reserve Bank over anti-money laundering and counter-terrorism failings. It's happening all over the place. But the Bendigo Bank copped it. And now,
they have
just
such a
this
clean image, the Bendigo
yes,
Bank.
Yes, that's right. That's all. Well, just this week, probably resulting from the fines and all that sort of thing, it's going to cut its workforce again. Now, it's already cut it once and got rid of a fair few workers. But now it's about to cut again. It's outsourcing some of its technology stuff. So they don't say how many staff are going to go. They're still working that one out. But, you know, as a result of all that, so it's not the directors and everyone else who cop it, but the workers when things happen.
Of course. I wonder who they're outsourcing to.
Well, they do tell us, actually, okay. If you want to know.
Obviously not that fellow who was banned recently.
Yeah. Infosys and Genpact, which will outsource the bank's technology and business management capabilities, those two respectively.
Keep our eye on them.
Yeah, that's right. And you'll be pleased to know that as EP, it's like you think, you know, every time something happens that might affect a certain part of the economy, they demand government assistance if jobs go in certain areas. That's not quite so. They tell us that AI is going to get rid of jobs, but it'll create them somewhere else. So the bosses say, well, workers have to go. But those workers aren't compensated. But if it hit the boss, that the boss had to go, the boss would say, we need some sort of government assistance.
Right.
That's how it works. I just thought I'd tell you that.
Thank you.
Yeah. Therefore, you must realise that when they got rid of capital punishment, we should have had done something for the executioner. Or public flogging, when the public flogger should have, had to get some sort of compensation for losing her or his job, presumably he. Those sort of things. Now, at the moment, because there's a boom in EV sales, although it's still only a relatively small percentage of total cars, the car parts retailers, who, of course, deal with the other cars, the petrol cars, they're screaming and yelling for help because they think because of all the EVs they'll lose work because they don't need
much
the work.
Hands yes, been the poor put out deals. Already?
So they've already got their hand out and and also you're right to determine, like, if you and I don't pay the electric bill this week or whatever, you suddenly get nasty notes and it gets worse and worse and all that sort of stuff and they come at you. David Jones is having a bit of problems financially at the moment,
right.
Poor old David Jones. So they've decided unilaterally to delay paying their suppliers. They just say, we're not going to pay you in 20 days, we're going to pay you in 60 or something.
Okay.
So if we could do the same thing, couldn't we? We could just say, look, I've decided to pay you later. I'm not going to pay you this month. I'm going to pay you, you know, in June.
That's a great one. I'll have to remember that trick.
Yeah, it's a good one, isn't it? Now, also, I want to give some sort of credit to our Environment Minister, Chris Bowen, who tells us how much he's about getting climate chains under control and bringing down that. But at the moment, because of all the fuel things happening, business is screaming out saying that we should currently ignore the climate change things, don't do anything about that at the moment, and don't take any action because there's more important things in life like fossils, which they are.
Mm.
And Chris Bowen this week said that climate change plans to do anything about climate change are now further down his to-do list. So the minister is responsible for keeping the environment under control, says it's not on his to-do list at the moment.
I love that he has a to-do list. He's just rearranging it.
And it's nothing to do with so his to-do list is to make sure that apparently the environment gets worse.
Fair enough. I mean, you know, you got other things to think about.
Yes. The industrial emissions reduction policy and he said that the fuel crisis had pushed climate plans further down his to-do list. So isn't that encouraging?
I think on his headstone it should read, "Wasn't on my to-do list."
That's right. Which was dying, but it happened anyway.
That's right. Yes, I can see it.
But there you are. It gets worse, actually.
Okay.
This is awful.
Surely not.
Yeah. No, it does. It does. And there's a mob called InfoSys, I think they're called. What are they called? Because there's a bit of a thing in the page here.
Similar to the Bendigo crowd, but anyway.
Yeah. Oh, no, INPEX. INPEX, they're
all
called.
The names. Can't keep
they're
track.
They're an energy giant, according to this, and they have an energy, they have a liquefied natural gas facility up north.
Okay.
Now, they're making the point themselves at this time when we've got such problems in the world with fuel, the union wants to go on strike.
Never.
Yes, because they won't pay them. Or they won't meet their things. Strikes, yes, over pay, potentially prolonged stoppages, adding further pressure on global gas supplies in a time of crisis.
Where's their sense of patriotism?
Oh, the Offshore Alliance, a partnership of the Maritime Union of Australia and Australian Workers' Union, applied on Wednesday, that was last Wednesday, for industrial action ballots, which, if endorsed, would allow 460 workers at INPEX's ICHTHYS, offshore and onshore operations to strike from as early as May 3. Isn't that awful? And it's the first round of a Tier 1 operator negotiations in the offshore oil and gas sector, and we followed by, dear me, Shell's Prelude and Chevron's Gorgon and Wheatstone facilities and Woodside. Isn't it awful? And they want a 3% of wage rise over and above inflation and other things. But, it's terrible. The company said it's doing all it can to facilitate all this, but you know, you've got to sit down and negotiate, haven't you?
I wonder what their profit line looks
well,
like.
Well, this is interesting, actually, because they're complaining about the fact that the workers are going to get so much money, but the union said that INPEX made $10 billion in net operating profit last year, and its four LNG shipments a week are worth about $140 million each. Mm. But the company said it respects the legal right of employers to take protected action, et cetera.
I don't know that.
Okay.
And
the ETU, ETU has threatened industrial action in the Pilbara. Now, what's happening there is that because the Pilbara has for a long, long time been de-unionised, and the employers tell us this means they have a wonderful relationship with their workers and everything's good. And they complain now that if it was unionised, it would cost them millions of dollars. Now, you have to think that one through. If it's a win-win situation with their workers as is, but if it gets unionised and they have to meet certain conditions, it's going to cost them millions. Does that mean those millions are being ripped off the workers now, or I can't
believe that one out. You're jumping to conclusions.
I am, aren't I? I'm having a bit of trouble with that one.
Make that one add up. I don't know.
So there you are.
No, it's all happening up north then.
It's all happening, isn't it? Now, look, we're doing housing, but before our guests come in, and here's one now. Hmm. Oh, look, that's a chance. Let's just hear it. Come on, let's hear it. Come on. Shane McGrath.
He's not having a go at you, I hope, Shane. Last Poor guy, month, he hasn't even got a mic yet. We have to give him a chance.
Yeah, he did fight back. Last month, Shane wasn't here and we were concerned, thought something might have happened to him, and he simply forgot. I mean, what an insult to City Limits.
Well, I was hoping I could convince you that it was maybe industrial action, trying to improve wages and conditions on the show.
Anyway, welcome, Shane. How are you?
Good, thanks. How are you doing?
Okay. Shane McGrath, by the way, for listeners who aren't aware, I'm sure many are, is with the Housing for the Aged Action Group, and we'll go to that in a moment. We'll take a quick break. Let's just read this out. This is a meeting next, or an event next Thursday, April 16th. That's tomorrow, actually, isn't it?
Tomorrow already.
Tomorrow, War or Public Housing, which could also be War on Public Housing, but it's War or Public Housing, mm-hmm. Resist the push to defund essential services. That it's in the Blue Room in the City of Melbourne's Multicultural Hub. Tomorrow at 6 p.m. there's free tea and coffee, so if nothing else, you get a free cup of coffee. And it's fully accessible. And the speakers include David Shoebridge, the Green Senator, Mercedes Zanker, the 3CR presenter and renegade activist here at 3CR, Louisa Pacini from Inner Melbourne Community Legal, and Nina Torrey Henderson, an architect with Building Action Now. It's funded by a number of groups, RAHU, the Socialist Alliance, the Greens, and Honk for Housing, Cultural Dissent, Alternative Culture, etc. Lots of stuff on the back of this leaflet I won't go into, but that's tomorrow, and I think, you know, it sounds great. City of Melbourne's Multicultural Hub at 6 o'clock tomorrow. It's opposite Queen Victoria Market, that hub, by the way. People want to know where it is. Mm-hmm. So that's tomorrow. Sean, Shane, you'll be there, will you, I suppose?
Yeah, we'll see.
We'll take a break and come wander back.
All right, let's just have a quick break.
The state government has sold 578 hectares of public land to private developers. They're building private-public partnership model housing over public housing land, and it's just not on.
Housing is just massively expensive. It's never been effective in this country to rely on the market to provide decent housing for people.
Rent has risen by 21%. That's median rent across the country as of January this year.
As the rents keep rising, so must we. And we must stand together as a collective, because this war cannot be won by the few. It will only be victorious by the many.
3CR. Stay tuned. Stay radical.
Shane McGrath, Housing for the Aged Action Group. Shane, just before you go to what you want to talk about, mm-hmm. I noticed in a local rag that comes out that for April the 1, and it wasn't an April Fool's joke, but an International Women's Day event run by the Darabin City Council they have every year. It's the Molly Hadfield Social Justice Oration. And it talks about the fact that Molly was a great campaigner for social justice, etc. Mm-hmm. But I raise that because, obviously, when I saw this in the paper, Molly, of course, was a close friend of ours, but also one of the founders of the Housing for the Aged Action Group.
Yes, she's still fondly remembered at HAG. We have a meeting room named after her, and we have pictures up and things like that.
Yeah.
She was a fantastic activist.
Great. She was part of a dinner group I was involved with, or still involved with, but she's no longer because she's dead. But she when Edith Morgan, who was a co-founder with her, were all part of that group. And when I saw that, I thought it was worth mentioning because she played such a key role at the Housing with Age Action Group.
Yeah, it's great that her memory remains alive through events like these.
Yeah. Anyway, what do you want to talk about today?
Look, I got a few things I want to talk about, and I thought I might start by just blowing my own horn a little bit.
Yeah,
I don't really like to talk about how long I've been a tenant advocate, but it's been a while. And through that time, I've always wanted to get a landlord's application to VCAT summarily dismissed. So VCAT has this power under Section 75 of the VCAT Act to just throw out a claim if it is frivolous, vexatious, misconceived, lacking in substance, or an abuse of process. And I would say that many claims that landlords or real estate agents bring to the tribunal fit these criteria.
Or every single one of them.
I mean, probably not every one of them fits one of those criteria. But like, there's a good chunk that do. VCAT is very reluctant to exercise this power. The positive way of saying that is that there is a high threshold for this sort of summary dismissal. The less charitable way is that, you know, VCAT is sometimes too accommodating to landlords that have made claims that just, you know, lack substance or are otherwise inappropriate. I remember when I first started doing this work, Steph Price, who's a fantastic lawyer, does a lot of tenancy work, really gave me the advice. You've always got to ask VCAT to do this, but they never will. So I've been pumping at this for years, and this month, finally, I got VCAT to throw out an application under Section 75. So I can retire happy now.
Very good.
Yeah.
Congratulations.
In terms
and
of
another
things,
how many years it will be for the next one. But
well, we won't talk about that. A few things that HAG's got going on at the moment. So we've started a monthly house chat event. It's a morning tea for members on the second Monday of every month. We had our first one earlier this week. We've had a lot of feedback from members that they, you know, enjoy participating and coming to meetings and things like that, but wanted more of a, you know, a casual or social event. So we're going to have this monthly morning tea. That's for older people who want to come along. You can talk about housing, talk about cost of living pressures, you know, all those sort of things, but also just a chance to meet other members, chat. Kevin, I know that you're a huge fan of the food at HAG events.
Yes, I am.
Let me say this was stellar, not because of anything that we did, but because of the fantastic contributions from our members. We had somebody baked a red velvet cake, somebody brought chocolate and walnut cupcakes. We had baklava, we had molasses and ginger cookies. It was spectacular.
Give me this time again. What time is
it? Yeah, so that's 11 to 12 on the second Monday of each month in person at Ross House.
11 to 12. And Ross House is in Flinders Lane. What's the address of people know?
247 to 251 Flinders Lane.
Yeah, yeah.
Another new project that is just starting up is called Housing Champions. So this is a program that will sort of train and support older people to talk, to be advocates for housing issues, talk about their own experiences, and also to talk about, you know, talk about housing issues for older people more broadly. The plan is, it's particularly in relation to the state election that's coming up later this year. We want to, you know, train our members to be out in their communities talking about these issues, talking to politicians, talking to other older people. So if you're interested in getting involved, you can check our website. You can register for the program there, or you can call the HAG office and talk to Jane, who's leading that project, one of our policy workers. The number, if you want to give us a call, is 9654-7389. I'm pretty sure you push option one, but maybe you just have to listen to the menu.
Whatever.
Maybe it's three.
We'll repeat that number before you go, by the way, just to people want to grab a pen or something. Yeah, but,
all right. Yeah, so if you want to grab a pen, I'll give out the address and the phone number and the website again at the end of the segment. And probably of these events, I mean, the house chat food was pretty great, but of these events, maybe the one I'm most excited about is on the 21st of May, we're going to be hosting Drag Bingo for Housing Justice. So that will be 6 to 8 p.m. on the 21st of May, just around the corner from 3CR at Evie's Disco Diner in Fitzroy. It's free, but you do have to book, which you can do through the HAG website. That's an event that's been organized by our LGBTQIA+ reference group. And it's described as sharing stories of housing struggles, survival, and connection across generations. So I think it will be fun and also meaningful and moving, and you might win something. I guess that's how bingo works. Kevin, do you have a drag name?
No, I haven't, unfortunately. I have to develop one, won't I?
I mean, Sydney Limits is right there.
Yeah, well, it doesn't sound too drag to me.
So those are the things I want to talk about. So more like stuff we've got coming up rather than policy stuff.
What's your drag name then?
Yeah, that's a good question. I'm not sharing that publicly. We're not sharing that with the listeners.
Have to go to the bingo night to find out.
Maybe. So those are really the things that I want to talk about this month. Is there other stuff that you wanted to talk about?
Well, it was that issue in St Kilda, I'm sure you're aware of, where the council had given land to a social housing group, ended up with a group called Housing First, And it was given to them on the condition that it mainly for older people, mm-hmm. Who live there, you know, live out their lives there, mm-hmm. and the count and the company is now the private community group, community housing group is now wants to flog it all off. They've already flogged some apparently, and render the people homeless. And it's just it's one that would surely affect you in the long run because when people are homeless, they, of course, end up needing help. It says one here, one like John Cox, 75, has lived in his unit for 23 years. St Kilda for more than six decades, originally selected for the group under a scheme specifically designed to keep long-term residents in the area in old age. He was assured he would see out his days there and only leave in a box. He said he couldn't believe it last month when told he'd have to move. And he's been under medical care because of the things, and residents have been told they might be relocated to other properties within Port Phillip, but those numbers are limited. Older residents have been offered places in a new retirement village in Brighton East, which residents say are tiny and far from community they have lived in for decades. And they were told that, you know, you either took the offer or you're homeless. It's pretty an awful situation.
Yeah, so... I think that's some of the former Glenlock homes, is that right?
May well be. I can't see it here, but
yeah.
Whatever, yeah.
So definitely, so we have, sorry, the examples that I know are of formerly a company, sorry, an organisation called Glenlock Homes. I'm not sure if these are the ones we're talking about, but pretty similar. Their properties were handed over to Housing First a couple of years ago because Glenlock no longer felt able to keep running them. And I think it's fair to say that a lot of the residents feel that Housing First's handling of that changeover has been pretty ordinary. People were concerned for a long time that they were going to try and sell off the properties and that people would have to leave, and they've been vindicated. I think that Housing First has a long way to go in sort of listening to the needs of the residents and making sure that people aren't disadvantaged by... You know, I mean, it should be a benefit to the residents when a big not-for-profit organisation takes over your home from a small charity, but often it doesn't seem to be.
Yeah, well, Dick Gross was mayor at the time. He's no longer on council, but he came out and he said it breached the entire ethos of the original agreement. The social housing was strictly limited to long-term locals being displaced by gentrification. Decades have passed and the provider has become huge. The nexus to both St Kilda and indeed Port Phillip is significantly diluted.
Okay, so I think that's not the same ones that I was talking about. So Housing First maybe has a bit of form for
all over the place.
Poor behaviour when it comes to taking over a property.
Yeah, well, it's... Yeah, well, it's a pretty serious one. I mean, if these people become homeless, they it probably ends up with the Housing with AIDS Action Group, a lot of them, I would think.
Look, I think that Housing First will make significant... they will, and they definitely should make pretty significant attempts to make sure nobody's made homeless in these processes in the same way that, you know, we don't approve the public housing demolition processes, but they have, the government, you know, to their credit to an extent, has made sure that people are rehoused out of that in, you know, maybe not ideal, but at least somewhat comparable circumstances. So I think it would be pretty incumbent on Housing First as a organisation that's supposed to be fighting homelessness, not to make people homeless in the process.
Yeah, even the state government, there was a story around that they're selling off, you know, homes as well, public housing homes, which means less and less public housing all the time. Yeah. There was just one, before we get to the end of this, an ad for, there's another, apparently it's coming soon to Sunbury, a wonderful, wonderful new village for over 55s, which I'm sure you'd love. Welcoming shared spaces and the freedom to live the way you want, Shane, which is absolutely wonderful. But it says potential to free up money, low maintenance living, own your own home and keep any capital gains. Those last two points, are they real with these things? Because,
well, they could be. I mean, it would depend on the individual contracts for the place.
Yeah, just that, you know, generally speaking, these places, rather than do that, are ripping you off
I mean, I'm not saying they're not ripping you off, but there's different models. You know, some of them take your money when you're leaving. Some of them take your money when you're going in. So there's definitely ways it can be exploitative while still allowing you to keep the capital.
So it's whether you're coming or going.
Well, look, I don't know. I'm not saying anything about this specific instance, but there's lots of different financial models for retirement villages. And some of the famous sort of rip-offs, they're not the only rip-offs. So people shouldn't think that because they're not getting hit with a deferred management fee or whatever they've heard about in the news, that the retirement village is fair. Conversely, they shouldn't assume, you know, that the retirement village is necessarily going to be ripping off without looking into it.
Read the small print anyway.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, we saw recently there was an example in a local paper of a new Lendlease community that was open up, and the headline in the local paper, you know, sort of advertorial, like classic style, said new over 55s village, no entry or exit fees. And we were very interested because no entry or exit fees?
Yes.
Seems like there's got to be, one or the other.
They get you in the middle of that one.
And then it turned out if you read, you know, like paragraphs down into the article, that it costs $484,000 and up to buy in. I was like, what's an entry fee if not that?
Oh, no, that's just the getting into the wood fee.
Yeah,
it's different to an entry fee.
Yeah, I'm not sure what an entry fee is if it's not the cost to enter.
Rightio. Now, before you go, give out that number again and that detail.
Yeah. So if you want to come visit us in person, it's 247-251 Flinders Lane, Melbourne, close to Flinders Street and Town Hall Station. If you want to give us a call, the number is 03-9654-7389. If you want to check out our website, that's oldertenants.org.au. You can sign up for the Housing Champions program and other RSVP stuff there.
Terrific. And also then there's the monthly get-together with the cakes.
House chats, bingo coming up. It's all happening.
Okay, Shane, thanks for coming in and thanks for your memory work this week.
Well, it's only going to get worse as time goes by.
We'll drop that one there and won't mention it again ever.
Uh-huh.
He's never going to rub it in again.
I'm sure that's true.
No, that's it. We can only run that one for a certain amount of time.
Forget about it. I won't know what you're talking about.
Okay, Shane McGrath, Housing with Ajax Group. Thanks, Shane, for coming in and see you next month. And we'll take a break, come back and talk to Jack Burton about his issues on housing as well.
Okay, you are on 3CR with City Limits. With Rainy Day, and you are with Kevin Healy and Anne on 3CR with City Limits.
Hey, but it's not too rainy because I've got a bike out there and I've got to ride home, so let's hope it keeps us this.
It's that old thing, if you take an umbrella with you, it won't rain.
That's right, yeah, we'll take a bike, it will. Okay, Jack Burton's on the line, Jack, with Friends of Public Housing and various other groups. And I know Jack's got a long, long list of things to talk about. But, Jack, just to kick off, that one I raised with Shane about the Housing First group in St Kilda just deciding to sell up even though they were given the land and the property by the council for a specific purpose of housing older people. It's pretty outrageous, isn't it?
Yeah, well, it's a funny one because Housing First used to be called the Port Phillip Housing Association.
It was, that's right, yeah, it was. Yeah,
yeah. And it was actually established by the Port Phillip Council, which is sort of, you know, but they sort of got this weird arrangement where it's some sort of trust structure, where so that the they were able to transfer a whole lot of the council assets to the Port Phillip Housing Trust, I think they call it, and then the Housing First is now called administer all that stuff. So Port Phillip Council seems to still have a say in it, and I know for a fact that they have a couple of directors on the board of Housing First as well. So it's all weird because it was, yeah, it was council land that they transferred. I had a look. It's looked it up while you were talking before. It's Greaves Street, the old transfer station, which is the development. But I mean, one of the things that, you know, these people sitting in offices, accountants looking at their spreadsheets and profitability, forget that the, you know, behind these houses are human beings. People, you know, who've lived there for, well, I think this development's 25 years old. But some people have lived there for 25 years. It's their home. And the next moment, they're just flogging it off. Never to be regained again for public housing, or in this case, community housing. So it's quite shocking.
Yeah, well, they said that bloke we quoted, John Cox, said that they were given a take-it-or-leave-it ultimatum by Housing First: accept one of two relocation offers or face homelessness. A threat one woman in her 80s claimed was explicitly described by staff as ending up on the street. It's a pretty caring attitude.
Well, yeah, I mean, so what are you going to do? You're going to just end up on the street. You're probably going to end up accepting whatever the offer is. And you lose your community.
And they
you lose your fellow residents. You lose maybe the shopping centre you used to walk to. You know, all sorts of things.
Well, your doctor, your medical thing, all that sort of thing. Yeah.
Well, having just been gone through a few dental things, you don't want to change dentists in your old age. It must be a traumatic experience.
Well, that's right. It's the entire network of your life that, particularly if, you know, that age, if you've lived there all those many, many years. I've known it to happen when people were relocated when the freeway came through in Fitzroy going back into the 70s. There was a woman who'd lived on that area of Alexandra Parade for many, many years. And she was distraught at having to move, and she moved to Preston but died very shortly after, and I've no doubt that the move contributed to her dying so quickly.
Yeah, there was all that mental health aspect to, and all that stuff, and you can't rescue that.
No,
you know, people, we're all human beings. Everyone is really now understands, you know, we respect the Aboriginals and their sense of community and connection to land. I think all people have that sense, and you know, and we should start respecting that more also for other people as well. And you know, like we wouldn't do it to some people, we do it to others. So pretty shocking. And I was not very happy about Housing First because they're very dodgy because they stole a name, which a lot of people might know that Housing First doesn't have a space between the two words, so it's all in one word. Yet the two words version of Housing First is known worldwide as a model for rehousing homelessness. And the name comes from Finland and is also quite popular around Europe in terms of rehousing homelessness. Homeless people has been incredibly successful in getting those people back into society. And the first thing you do is give people a house. You know, give them that sense of connection.
Well, that's interesting. So, yeah, it's pretty make shocking, it one word and you do the reverse. You throw them back on the street.
Yeah. Yeah, what was wrong with the name Port Phillip Housing Association? It shows the integrity of the organisation that they're happy to steal a name because it's probably marketing wise they figure it was a better option just to adopt a name that is very popular around the world. So
it's very anyway. Orwellian, isn't it?
Whatever that means.
Yes, it is. It is.
He was an awful, wasn't he, Orwell?
Yes. Anyway. Jack, I know you had a number of items you wanted to talk about yourself today.
I was sort of just going to... I keep hating the word affordable housing. I was going to have a rant about that. Nowadays it's sort of... all done in the same sentence, social and affordable housing. And it's like, because I looked into this a long time ago and nothing's changed. In the end, it's developers and community housing businesses all about making money. And even though, in one case they might be not for profit, but they're also not for loss. And they also have the expansion sort of desire. So I'm talking about community housing there, and developers obviously wanting to make a profit. And they're always happy to have their hand out for the public person. If they don't get that, they don't do much. They'll sit on land and whatnot. Get heaps of planning concessions, allow to stack heaps more apartments on a block of land. They get access to public land. There's just so many examples of public land being given away. I remember the old car park at Balaclava Station was an example of where the generous Port Phillip Council also gave that land to a developer/and housing person to develop it. It's often the community housing organisation, they don't actually do the development, they actually go and do a partnership with a developer. And so, some of the houses or apartments are classified as social housing, and the affordable housing is still run by the community housing business. Because affordable housing has various definitions, but in this case, it's usually 80% of the median rental of the area. And so it's a rental property, so affordable housing. It's not about buying. It's a rental property, and it has to be managed by someone. It's usually the community housing group that steps in and generously manages that alongside their own social housing. So it's one and the same as far as I'm concerned.
And 80% is still very high if you're on some sort of limited income.
We know that
in public housing you pay 25%, in social housing you pay roughly 30%, but it's going to be a lot more than 30%, 80% of the of what the current market value is.
So I guess it helps them screw more money, more rental, because it's even higher than the 30% of income for someone who qualifies for community housing. And the other dodgy part about it all is, after getting all these generous concessions, there's no sort of proper regulation about this whole affordable housing thing. And often those so-called affordable housing properties end up back on the private market. And they have clauses in the developer contract, 5 or 10 years is typically the period. And they're back on the private market anyway. So...
Well, we talked last month about that development in, in Coburg, Assemble Communities, that got a permit to go over the height limit on the basis of so many affordable units in the place, and then now they've gone to VCAT trying to have that watered down, having already got the things up there, so they're... and they claim to be an ethical developer, and yet they've they're trying to renege on the deal they did with the council in the first place.
Yeah, they just use the word ethical developer.
Yeah, well, that's right. There's an oxymoron there, Jack. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, those two words.
I did say they claimed to be, Jack. I did say they claimed to be.
Yeah. And then, just to slam it in, from a number of years ago now, but the Australian Treasury looked at all the various housing models, and with affordable housing being right at the top, and they've actually said in writing that most of these alternate housing schemes are not financially viable without a leg up from the government. And so, just as I said, and so they're sucking money out of the public purse for their own private gains. And the Treasury report actually says additional funding, transfer of public housing, help with public land and favourable leases, and then also favourable taxation and other concessions. So, in the end, okay, so, it might be some sort of reduction of market rent for people who are on higher incomes anyway, can afford that market rent, and it's all public money gone into an affordable housing black hole. So, it is just another investment scheme, often involving community housing. And back in the old Rudd GFC crisis, they went and did a thing called National Rental Affordability Scheme. That was a thing. That was one of these, basically an affordable housing scheme, where they poured money into the developers so that they would cut their rentals back to 80%. And there were reports around the time it cost the country over $1 billion, that scheme, just money into developers' pockets, basically, so that the government could wave a flag and say, hey, we've just gone and developed a whole pile of affordable housing. So, not happy.
No, well, there's a mob called NEX, N-E-X. The Finn Review describes it as the country's fourth largest home builder. They're a Japanese company, and they've just launched into land development, spending $180 million to purchase real estate for 900 homes across New South Wales, but they're all over the place. But then they go on about what wonderful things they're doing, but then they then say cost pressures have been rising in land and housing development as a result of the Iran conflict, and the company's aim was to absorb higher imposts, but that government should not also consider relief measures to encourage development. This serves as an opportunity for a broader conversation. If the housing industry is expected to deliver meaningful housing supply, it is an opportunity for governments to look for relief measures. So this mob who are investing all this money are now crying out for government help.
Yeah, well, they're always doing that. And, I'm not sure what sort of development they're doing, but, one of the big ones, it's quite scary that the size of it that's going on is this whole build-to-rent thing that's going on. And I think even community housing won't like them because they're doing their own rental management, so they're not outsourcing it to someone else because they're doing developments, and they're in the thousands, numbers of units. They never even come onto the private market. And, obviously trying to be upmarket, market themselves, do all the marketing things so they can charge as much as they can, and yet again we're giving these companies tax concessions. That seems to be the main way that they get benefit out of the government. But then there are people who also do stupid things like grants equals money donated. It's a fancy financial words for donation of money, public money. And I also
it's called
get
corporate welfare, Jack.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I love it. Yeah, it's I guess who can blame these companies for trying to make more profit? Go out and get it any which way you can. I mean, the last thing that matters is the public. Anyway.
Yes, that's. Got a damn cough now, but
oh, the other one I was just going to have a crack at is much vaunted Victoria Big Housing Bill, which was came out during the COVID era announcement, the $5.3 billion project to develop 12,900 homes, and 2,900 of those are these so-called affordable homes. 9,300 are social. So in other words, they're all going to community housing in one way or the other. And looking at the developers and who's involved, there's, you know, Good Old Housing First is there, Unison Housing is there, Housing Choices is there. And there is absolutely zero public housing involved in that project. The government's quite happy to admit that nowadays. Back at the time, they wouldn't answer the question in Parliament. But now they just blatantly go, yeah, it's no public housing. Spending $5.3 billion of our money, and it's becoming assets for community housing businesses and private developers.
Yeah, and they, if the same money went directly into public housing, of course, you'd start to resolve the problem pretty quickly, I would have thought.
Well, yeah, you know, the waiting list is about 60-odd thousand applications, and this would getting 12,900. We're starting eating in that gap. I mean, the one thing I can at least say about that project is they seem to be getting there. They're multiple years behind the original target. The latest number I saw was 4,000 odd have been completed out of that 12,000, and about another 6,800, they said at the time, underway. So more, at least a brick has started being laid, or maybe the permits have all gone through or whatever, but they're underway. So one way or the other, it is delivering stuff to community housing, but poor old public housing, which, because remember, community housing also don't take the people at the head of the queue, the poorest people, the ones on the lowest incomes, they're further up the queue. So the rest are left fighting for the remaining what is called public housing, which is what we're on about. We're asking for more public housing for the people at the front of that list, the ones on the lowest incomes.
And as they reduce the levels of public housing, that list for those people gets longer, the wait gets longer and longer, of course.
And we all know there are people who don't bother even going onto the list because they know they'll be waiting 5 or 10 years.
Yeah, or longer probably, that's right.
That's a very common number now, 5 years of waiting. And and heavens help us, what do those people do in the meantime? Where are they living?
And of course, we've got the government sort of big build program. They promised all these fast tracked shovel ready housing projects. But of course, they they're years behind in that as well. And that's actually for private developers.
Yeah. Well, some really weird ones went on there because they even had the little housing projects. You know, those little houses, they were popular for a while there. People were talking about them.
That's right.
You know, the things that you can basically put on a trailer. And I remember at the time there were some philanthropists donating, their assets because, this sounds like a real good thing to donate to. So I should actually look up and see what happened to them because I don't hear much about them now.
No, that's right. The little house used to be the dunny down the backyard, but it's no longer, apparently.
I think the good news is I think the negative gearing and capital gains tax is in the headlights in terms of policy, one or two governments away, hopefully. So,
we're going to end up, how awful, we're going to end up on good news. But anyway, you're right. I mean, we'll wait and see because there's all sorts of pressures now because of what's happening in the Middle East, of course, on the budget. But hopefully they will do something about those things,
That's right, So the seeds have been sown.
Yeah, we'll probably know, won't we? Well, the May budget, we'll probably know by next time we talk. So we'll...
Yeah. Okay.
All right, Jack, look, thanks for your time today, and we'll talk again next month.
Okay, you're welcome.
Okay, thanks a lot. Jack Burden there from Friends of Public Housing, and as you can see, he is a friend of public housing. Next week's a fourth Wednesday, it is indeed. Hoping to talk to Freya Leonard, actually. I haven't spoken to her, but I hope we can talk to Freya Leonard from Australian Conservation Foundation, because with what's happening in the Middle East also, suddenly fossils are coming to the fore, and we're telling we must, as I said earlier, we must cut back on trying to do anything about pollution. And we've just approved a new gas facility in Corio Bay. So I want to talk to her about all those things. She's the gas person at Australian Conservation Foundation. Oh, Anne, thanks for keeping us on air.
It was a pleasure, Kevin.
All right, and Joe Toscano coming up.
Stay with us for Anarchist World This Week.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.